Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lincoln on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lincoln on Lending, David Lincoln.
Filling in today for Dave, who is on vacation with his family. He wanted me to make sure that I tell you about the fact that he is going to be on CNBC today talking about housing. And for those of you on the Eastern time zone, that's going to be about 4:30, 3:30 Central. So again, CNBC, stay tuned and watch for Dave Lincoln at that time. So without any further delay, we're going to jump right into our segments here, and I'm going to say hello to Joe. How are you, Joe, on this holiday week? Is that a good thing or a bad thing for the markets?
Well, it could be a volatile thing. It's always a week when there's not a lot of activity, especially when you have a holiday in the middle of the week. You got half the group taking Monday and Tuesday off, the other half taking Thursday and Friday off, and that kind of leads to volatility. But today, anyway, it's good volatility. Prices are up. MBS prices are up pretty nicely. They're up 10/32 so far.
All right.
I just went up to 11, up 11/32 on the day, and we've seen some favorable price changes already. And the motivator today is the ISM report came out this morning below 50%, below 50, which means it's not growth, it's shrinkage, it's contraction. First time it's been negative or below 50 since July 2009, and the markets reacted pretty quickly and pretty swiftly to that negative reading just another sign that we may be in for a difficult road ahead.
So is that really what that means? So, you know, I don't watch that. I think it's the supply management report you're talking about, right?
It's the Institute of Supply Management, yeah, and it's got a measurement that 50 equals no growth, no contraction. Anything above 50 is growth. Anything below 50 is contraction. Today's measure was just below 50. It's 49.7, which, again, was the first time it's been negative or below 50 since September of 2009. So it's really and 52 was expected. I know that doesn't sound like a lot, but it's the difference between some growth and some contraction. So the market's really reacted to that measure.
How often is that report published?
It's a monthly report, Allison. Yep.
So how many months does it take to be a trend? I mean, is 1 month? I mean, like you said, there was quick reaction. So, you know, Is this just a blip on the screen? And
well, a good month, going back over the last few years, a good month was about 60. And that we hadn't seen 60 since over a year ago. For most of 2012, the measure has been between 55 and 50. And so the trend has been slow growth, kind of like what you hear the Fed talking about. It's, you know, it's just slowly moving along, not going backwards. But as we've begun to see here lately, the economy, the measures are typically not quite as good as what people expect, and this is one more measure of that. And in fact, this is in fact saying there's a bit of contraction now. To contrast that, this morning construction spending came out much better than expected. It's not given as much weight as the Institute of Supply Management, but it came out better than expected. And nice thing for our industry is that most of the increase in construction spending had to do with increases in residential construction spending. So that kind of supported a good housing market. And as I would be talking about in a little bit, as it related to last week, we saw very good housing numbers coming out of the announcements last week. So good for housing, not so good for the overall economy.
So the prices, let's see, so where are we at now? Oh, Europe. So is it time to talk about Europe?
Well, let's talk about the Supreme Court in Europe and all the distractions that we went through last week. You know, the Supreme Court's ruling on Obamacare was quite a surprise, but not quite not much of a market mover. I think stocks fell just a bit on the news, and MBS prices went up just a little bit on the news, but not a big mover. The big mover last week happened on Friday. The European summit ended, the European Union summit ended Friday with, throughout the week, there'd been very little expectation of anything of substance coming from that summit, and they surprised people in that. Friday, they announced basically three things. One was that they were going to pledge support for European banks, primarily Spanish banks, in the form of added capital as needed and liquidity as needed. They pledged to support the European Union bond auctions, again, primarily Spain and also Italy, in order to reduce the overall rates that they have to pay to attract money. That was very effective, as on Friday alone, the required yield on Spanish and Italian bonds came down about 50 to 75 basis points. So that kind of reduction in interest payment is substantial to those countries. And then the third thing that it did in the announcement was they committed to create a European to fund the European Investment Bank with some additional money, $10 billion, I think, which they'll then capitalize to lever to get to $60 billion, and then there's another $55 billion come along from somewhere else. But the point being that they're looking at the potential this potential entity as being able to provide the funds to the private entities that can expand the economy and to grow. And so they're promoting growth here. And all this combined was more than what people expected. And as a result, the stock market rallied 275 points. MBS prices initially fell a bit more, but on the day we're down on Friday. Last week, all the pessimism that preceded the meeting caused MBS prices to improve. The reversal that happened when things came out a little more positive than expected on Friday didn't offset the fact that for the week MBS prices were up, and then when you add today's price improvement, we're just about the highest point we've been in MBS prices for like the Fannie Mae 3.5 ever.
Wow!
So it's been a big move here lately.
Well, I know that was something that they were really hoping for, was that European Investment Bank, and so that was a big surprise, at least from what I had been hearing. So, well, that's good. So now we're left with, I think you already mentioned, the new home sales and pending home sales show signs of growth from the prior month.
Yeah, and those were seasonally adjusted, and so there is that built into it. But any sign of growth or improvement is a good thing, as we've been at the bottom
right.
for so long.
Of course, we haven't seen a lot of dirt moving in the Midwest, so I'm not quite happening.
It's regional. I know they're building a lot of new housing units in downtown Austin.
Oh, so that's where it's all at. Everybody moved
that's
to Texas.
It's all there.
Uh-huh. All right. So let's see. So this week, short week, and what
short
do you expect?
Short week, yeah. Well, you know, it's all going to be about employment. Thursday has the weekly jobless report, jobless claims, and ADP is going to come out on Thursday this week, and those will give us some hint as to what might happen on Friday, which is when the jobs report's announced at 8:30 Eastern time. The market's calling for 100,000 new jobs, net new jobs, and no change in the unemployment rate. So, talk
sound
of
like
late.
A lot of good news.
No, but talk of late is that it's not even going to be that high. So
okay.
I'm not so sure if it was a little lower than that. It would be a big surprise. But, you know, this is always one of the most important announcements of the month. And so pay attention with a light volume. The potential
right.
reaction to this is even greater. So be prepared and be on the look. Look
so
out for it.
Status quo is instability.
Uncertainty and instability.
Yeah, all right. Well, thanks so much for that, Joe. You know, I've had a question that's been bugging me for a while as I watch how low rates keep going and just this refi mania we've got going on again. And what's the long-term impact of this? You know, we watched the housing bubble. We kept saying, what can be wrong with appraisals increasing? And right now I'm saying to myself, it seems like there's got to be consequences on the other side of this with rates going down for so long, you know, and companies who are really relying on this refi revenue right now.
Sure. I mean, it's got to create a population or a portfolio of loans that are going to be hard to refinance in the future. And, you know, when we started out in the industry in the 80s, we all saw our parents having, 5% mortgages,
right.
And they were simply not going to go. They weren't going to move. They weren't going to lose their mortgage. They certainly weren't going to refinance their mortgage. Cash out wasn't a big option at the time. But, yeah, I think we're creating a population or a portfolio of loans that are similar to that, that are going to be incented. There's going to be motivation for them to stay. There's going to be motivation for them to improve their property rather than move. And there certainly will be little motivation if you're sitting on a 3.5%, 4% mortgage out in the future to refinance it. And so we're working hard now, and we're making lots of money now on the refinance activity we see, but there'll be a reduction of this in the future. And as Andy pointed out, there are a number of people out there whose values won't let them refinance, at least not using conventional methods, until their properties appreciate. And over time, we hope to see those people come into the pipeline of potential refinances. And we hope to see the purchase money business pick up as, economies improve and the real estate market continues to improve and prices, property values go up. So, yeah, I think you're right to sound a concern there, because there should be a reduced population of loans to work on and unless maybe you get into the second lien business.
Well, and Andy, like Joe said, you had some thoughts on this when we were in the pre-call. So are you on the line? So you were talking about maybe we'll get a FICO boom to offset this.
Well, yeah, because the conventional wisdom is that when the current coupon's, you know, 2 or even coming close to 1, and you think, how in the world are you ever going to have a refinance boom again? And because my contention is that while there are a lot of people refinancing, and there's going to continue to be for the foreseeable future as everybody with 8s, 7s, 6s, 5s, and 4s looks at refinancing, those that are potentially rate-wise in the money where it would make sense to them to refi, everybody in the Rust Belt, you know, Michigan, Wisconsin, a lot of those states have depressed real estate values. So those folks, even if they had in the money rates, haven't been able to refi because the property values. California, Florida, Nevada, same all the sand states, same problem, upside down real estate values. So and then on top of that, you've got the folks that went through 2008, 2009, 2010. Unemployment, job issues, credit issues that now have poor FICOs, those folks still have to come around. So they could have an in-the-money rate and positive equity and still not be able to refi because of FICO. So there's really two elements keeping people from refinancing, even though they would otherwise like to, credit and property values. And as both of those two things get resolved, then that group of people will be able to be refinanced. So while typically you'd say that refinance in the future is going to be very limited because everybody that refinances now won't be able to refinance in the future because or wouldn't be a candidate to refinance in the future because they've got a very low rate mortgage. You know, aside from people moving around, your typical purchase move around market, I do think there's going to still be some refi opportunities because of those two factors.
Awesome. Well, so
Alice, a question for you.
Go ahead. Sure.
FHAs, aren't they still qualifying assumable?
Yes, actually it is interesting that you bring that up because with they are assumptions and you still have to qualify, but certainly it is something that you need the other side of the equation in order to have an assumption market where we do have the low rates, so all these loans that are closing on a low rate, and we just need a stable market for those folks going
mm-hmm.
forward, and it might work. We might have assumption capabilities in the future.
There's going to be assumability value in these 3.5% and 4% mortgages.
Absolutely.
FHA.
Oh,
well,
don't bring up wraps.
that's a pot. But if property values don't appreciate too rapidly, if you can come to the market with a little equity, you can assume a mortgage and participate in that low rate for a long time.
Yeah, it'll be like the 70s where you were just happy to get enough equity to pay the realtor so you could move.
Uh-huh.
But I think there's going to be another factor out there too, and that's the apartment dwellers. There's folks that had a house, lost it. As a matter of fact, I have a rental that has tenants in there right now in the circumstances. They had a house, had a problem. This is in Texas. Had a foreclosure. Couldn't go buy another house, and so they're renting a property that I own. And so at some point, and this happened all across the country. It's not unique to Texas. It's happened everywhere. People moved into apartments, moved into rental houses because they, you know, had problems. Those folks are going to be coming back into the market as purchases. So I think some of the purchase activity may actually be accelerating beyond your typical move around job change market because they can come now back in. So while, again, there may be a little bit more of a challenge on the refi, I still think that there's origination potential out there on a couple of different sources. It's just going to be different than it's been before because it's kind of like, you know, the baby boomers all hit colleges all at once, and you got people that are in apartments and houses, rent houses, now they're going to come back in and purchase. So I think there's mortgage activity out there in a lot of different places. It just may not have been where it's been before.
Well, and I love the idea that there's a new market out there that people can try and attack called your reentry borrower, right? You have your first-time
exactly.
home buyers and your reentry buyers. So,
exactly, Alice. That's it.
Excellent. All right. Well, thank you both for your feedback. I was curious, and I appreciate your wisdom on that subject. So let's go to our first break, and we'll be right back with the legislative update after this.
Economic uncertainty has created a tremendous amount of market volatility for the past few weeks. Intraday price changes seem the rule rather than the exception. Have you been surprised by a midday price change? Have you been frustrated as you locked the loan just ahead of a price movement? Found it difficult to explain to a customer why the rate you quoted is no longer available? MBS Quoteline can eliminate these frustrations. MBS Quoteline monitors Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and Ginnie Mae mortgage-backed security prices in real time. It makes the information conveniently available on your desktop, smartphone, or by email or text message. These are the same prices used to set mortgage rates each morning and to issue midday price changes when significant movement occurs. With MBS Quoteline, you'll never be out of touch with the market,
whether you're in the office or on the road.
See for yourself what MBS Quoteline can do for you. Go to mbsquoteline.com to start a risk-free two-week trial.
mbsquoteline.com.
646-716-4972. The Lincoln on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lincoln.
Hello, everybody. This is Alice Alvey with you today, and with your legislative update, I've just got to remind you, you have to get your QM comments in. The comment period is expiring on July 9th. Of course, you have through July 9th to go ahead and get your comments in on the QM rule. We've talked about that on previous shows, so go listen to the previous recordings to get the scoop on that. It is docket number CFPB 2012. 0022. You can just simply put that in an email to the regulators if you like, but get that docket number in there. So other things on the legislative front, we do have Fannie and Freddie filing a suit challenging the position for state and local taxes. As many of you know, for those of you who are in a state with a transfer tax, there's been a lot of back and forth as to whether or not Fannie and Freddie are obligated to pay these. I mean, in Michigan, we certainly have a lot of houses that are owned by the agencies, and we have a transfer tax, and it's transaction by transaction. For a while, they weren't paying them at all, and neither was the buyer of the home. So right now, they're trying to contest and say that they're exempt from having to pay these transfer tax. What remains to be seen is, if they're exempt, does that mean it falls on the buyer, and now it costs a couple extra $1,000 for a buyer to buy a home in those states? So we will be watching those suits to see how that comes out. The other one is a CFPB lawsuit. Thomson Reuters was reporting that a small bank is going to be challenging the leadership of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. We have talked about in the past that there were laws proposing to change the CFPB structure so that it was a board, not just one individual. And so it is the State National Bank of Big Spring, Texas, and two other conservative groups who are suing the CFPB. It was filed last week, and it starts with the recess appointment of Richard Cordray, and the structure of the agency is what they're questioning. The lawsuit's also targeting the Financial Stability Oversight Council, which is a coalition of existing regulators that's tasked with the Dodd-Frank to study the financial system. And the lawsuit's arguing that the classification of some banks as systemically important, that this could raise funding costs for smaller banks, because the market would believe that systemically important banks have implicit government backing. So we certainly don't want to have that. But we will be watching these two suits for you because they do have some implication to us at the market. The other thing I found interesting as you're looking for interesting reading was the GAO report on appraisals. Who else reads this stuff but me? Thank goodness you listen to this show every week so you don't have to read it. You know, and I had to read this because, first of all, you find really cool statistics in the back of these things. But to start with, the GAO report was required under Dodd-Frank, and in the report they ultimately came out, which we all know that appraisal management companies really need some more oversight. Obviously, in a lot of markets, there's a lot of concern about our appraisers being fairly paid. You know, are they really scrubbing the reports and underwriting the reports like a lot of lenders believe? I mean, how much quality checking is really going on? Certainly, there's some really good AMCs out there, but there are a ton of AMCs, and I'm with them that we need to make sure there's the right oversight. Well, in this report was a report on the, it has a table, table two, percentage of each enterprise's first lien mortgage purchases originated using their automated underwriting systems. I thought that would be 100%. I didn't think they bought anything anymore unless it had been run through DU or LP. And I was really surprised to see Fannie Mae in 2010, 59% of the loans were purchased, first lien mortgages, were originated using the AUS system. Only 59%, 28% from Freddie Mac. What does that say about the rest of the loans that they're buying in the portfolio? You know, does that mean they're really buying loans that don't get approved or accept eligible? So I got to dig some more into that, and if I find out anything else, I will let you know. So let's make sure we take a break here, and we're going to take a quick commercial break and be right back with Andy Schell.
Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality training throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals
providing classroom and web-based delivery
and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees both live and online on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com.
Welcome back to Lincoln on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now here's David Lincoln.
Hi, everybody. It's Alice here. Andy, how are you? I can't wait to hear what the Profit Doctor has to say today.
Well, I had a series of questions I was thinking about, Alice, today as I was looking at it's July the 2nd, we're coming up on the 4th, and everybody's excited about being outside and having barbecues. And, you know, what better way to talk about our mortgage company is going to get barbecued when the CFPB comes in? And so I've been thinking about what are the things that people are worried about? What keeps people up at night? When you're laying in bed at 3:30 in the morning, you know, why is that happening to me? Quick, get some melatonin. And so, you know, a couple of things I wanted to talk about was I wanted to talk about are the CFPB audits really that bad?
Uh-huh.
And then two other quick topics. Is the NMLS call report concern fixed? Are we all set? And then lastly, we're seeing a lot of banks getting into mortgage, and so I wanted to touch just real briefly on how do banks measure mortgage production results? Because it needs to be different than it is for a mortgage company. So the first point, and I got to watch the time here because I know we have a really important segment coming up soon. The first point is, are CFP audits really that bad? Well, you know, having Joe and I both, you know, we've all been around commercial banks for a long time, and both Joe and I have been CFO at commercial banks. And, you know, when the examiners come in, they sometimes give you advance notice. They almost always give you advance notice, and they'll send out prepared by client, like if you're doing an audit, a list of schedules they want pulled, and sometimes they'll give you loan numbers they want, or sometimes they'll show up and give you the list. They'll ask for a list, and you'll have to go pull the HUDs like Alice was talking about last week. And it's one of those things where when you've gone through it a number of times, it's still a pain, it's still a hassle, and there's a process that you go through to accommodate that. And so having done it many years, it's not like you get used to it, but you understand what's coming, and so it's not the fear of the unknown because you know what to expect. Well, the problem is for mortgage companies now is it's going to be is what to expect when you're expecting, because we've never done this before. We've never had federal representatives coming into our shop and nosing around. You know, we've had Fannie and Freddie audits and HUD audits, but this is a whole different world. And the scary thing that people haven't really addressed completely is that, you know, commercial banks directors, board of directors of commercial banks have personal liability for losses the bank incurs. And that's not official yet for mortgage companies, but as the CFPB continues to do the leveling the playing field, some of that's going to happen too. So people need to take it seriously and be prepared. And if you already have a staff that's really, really busy and full-time busy, you need to expect the fact that having a CFPB audit is like having your volume double in 3 days, because your staff that's been working on your volume is now going to get dragged into dealing with other stuff. You don't just expect that CFPB is going to show up and everybody's going to keep doing what they've always been doing. It's going to be very disruptive, and you need to have a plan now for how you're going to staff the resources to respond to the examiner's requests. So I guess that's probably the biggest takeaway is the CFPB audits don't have to be bad if you're prepared for them and staffed for them. And Alice talked about some of the staffing issues a little bit last week.
I was just going to say that's such a huge point, you know, that people, because we've seen it already happen to a few companies, and you don't know what you don't know. So is it worth somebody going through kind of a practice audit and a mock audit and to find that, you know, one or two things that they might be off on?
Yeah, well, I think it's not just finding the one or two things that they might be off on or defending the content of their call report, you know, the NMLS report, or it's really just what happens when someone walks in the door and says, oh, by the way, pull 1,000 HUD ones for me. And,
right.
You know, how are you going to deal with this? So just have a plan in advance for how you're going to deal with the demands that come from the audit that's going to land on you. That's
or like the
Mortgage
Acts and Practices Act. Can you reproduce for me what your website looked like on January 5th, you know?
That's a good one. Yes, exactly. Exactly. And maybe you prepare for that in advance by every day doing a screenshotter. You know, I don't know how you'd accomplish that exactly, but exactly, that's part of it. So the other two things I wanted to mention on quickly, as I'm watching the clock tick away here, is the NMLS call report concern fixed? Well, we haven't been talking about it a lot in a while, and the people have sent in their reports, and the states have the information, and the Department of Justice has the information, and the IRS has the information, and the Department of Labor has all the information, and they're out there in the background running their statistics. They're looking at the RMLA section when they're looking at volumes and numbers of units and dollar amounts of loans that have closed and by each originator. And they're going back to the company now. They're looking at the financial section of the call report, and they're looking at the compensation paid to the production team, and they're running numbers to see if these make sense. And so, you know, it's kind of like the tsunami in the middle of the water, in the middle of the ocean. It's just barely a ripple. It doesn't wait until it gets on shore that it becomes a 300-foot wave. So I don't think the call report is fully resolved. We still have a couple clients we're working with to make certain that the information in the report is right. As a matter of fact, one quick point. If you look at the short form financial condition section of the report, the asset section doesn't add up because there's no place to report loans held for sale. Now, you do have to report the warehouse lines, but you don't report the loan held for sale. There's no place to put it. It's a statistical report, not a footing report. So most people added it to a category where it shouldn't have been in order to make it add up. But you really that's not what the definitions of the field say. So there's some tricks right out of the gate to know if people did the NMLS report right. And unfortunately, a lot of people didn't, and so now we got to deal with what's going to happen when the CFPB shows up and they ask you, let me see your call report, now let me see all the supporting detail for that call report. So it's not done yet. We are going to have to come back and continue to focus on the two segments of the NMLS report. Now, last but not least, unless we're running out of time here, Alice, I want to make sure we've got enough time.
Well, we got a couple minutes to do that, and then the three of us can chat about it, because I think it's an important one that you were going to talk about measuring mortgage profitability, right?
Yeah. I wanted to talk about measuring mortgage profitability in a financial institution. We see a lot of commercial banks getting into mortgage banking, and this is awesome. It's really, really good. They're getting in the warehouse arena, which is awesome, and they're also getting involved in direct origination as an originator, as a lender, taking applications and closing loans in their name and participating in the secondary market. So it's just there's a lot of changes that have to take place because banks typically think in terms of spread. They have a balance of assets on their books offset by a balance of liabilities on their books, and the difference between the earnings they make on the loans and the cost they incur for their deposits creates a spread in there, and they manage that spread and offset it by some rate, by some operating cost, and that's how they manage their book of business. But mortgage banking is not a spread-based business. Mortgage banking is a fee-based business. It's all about generating a loan, selling the loan as quickly as possible, redeploying the capital, and then doing it all over again. So it's a very different mindset. And so when you take your typical bank measures, banks like to measure their results based on return on assets, return on equity, whereas in mortgage company, we like to measure it based on return on investment. And we'll see 30, 40% ROI in a mortgage bank. And if you were to apply an ROA to a mortgage company, all of a sudden the numbers don't make any sense because it's not a spread-based business. It's an activity-based business. And you have to understand what you're trying to convert and how to make it apples to apples. Otherwise, the controllers in the commercial banks, eyes roll back in their head when all of a sudden the results don't make any sense. So we're working with banks to sort that out and understand how to take the results of a mortgage operation and have it make sense in a commercial banking operation. So that's just an important distinction to understand.
Joe, did you have anything you wanted to add to that?
Yeah, I'd throw into that Andy, your analysis between the two types of that, operations is right. I've always thought of mortgage banking as a manufacturing activity where it's all a measure of revenues and cost of sales, and there's not a lot of margin in it usually. That's not so true now, but you have to be very mindful of your costs and to manage those costs consistently with ever changing volumes, and banks just aren't used to that. And so measuring the P&Ls in a cost manufacturing kind of environment where you have cost centers and you can measure the costs that go into that and the revenues created by that, you get a sense of is that operation making money or not.
Well, and it plays to both one of the challenges that we talked about earlier with the interest rate environment that we're in. Some of these companies are really slow to hire because they want to just kind of keep things moving down the assembly line and stuff's falling off the line. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And you need people behind them picking stuff up, you know, or how do you rearrange the assembly line to get it done and still stay profitable versus, you know, then the bank side on the ROI, they hate hiring people temporarily. You know, they look at it as such a long-term process.
We have Lucy and Ethel on the chocolate line right now.
Oh, some people are way too young to remember that. You're all going to have to go to, the cable channel with the reruns out there. But that's exactly what it's like. I think Lucy ends up eating all the chocolates, so instead of actually getting them down the assembly line.
Sounds like a fun job to me.
Well, Andy, do you see that people today are being able to manage their margins? I mean, Joe, you just kind of threw that in there. It's revenue to cost of sales, and normally margins are really tight. And I see companies picking different models for that. One of my customers I was at recently, they want to operate on a tight margin, and what they have an originator do is next to nothing, and everything's back shop. Then you go to another shop, and they've got the originator doing everything all the way to DU and practically submitting the file. So, you know, philosophies vary right now on how to handle this.
Well, that's a great point. And some of the best practices on margin management are changing because, while we are able to get a little bit better margin in various products and in some respects substantially better margins on certain products because of all the things that have happened, there's also more costs. You know, compliance is going to be a much bigger cost. Accounting is going to be a much bigger cost. I think we're going to also have to look at upgrading our technology. So technology is going to be a bigger cost. So I guess my point about margin management and managing the books is that, you know, take your book of rule of thumbs and shred it. It's going to be different. You can't just apply mortgage banking rule of thumbs to what's happening today and what will be happening over the next couple of years. You've got to model it based on what your activity is, based on when I say model, I mean build an Excel file, get an Excel spreadsheet, put in your revenue drivers and your expenses and that are based on activity and volume, and then calculate what your earnings are going to be based on your spreads and your activity and your costs. That's what I mean by model it. And then that way you'll know what you expect to earn, and it's also an essential tool for managing your cash flows going forward.
Well, you know, something that just occurred to me, Andy, as you were saying all that, was how much of the fees you can and cannot pass on to the customer these days. It used to be, you know, again, in a mortgage bank environment, not CFPB regulated, you looked at every single time I had a cost, you tried to figure out a way you could pass that on to the consumer. Well, we're finding more and more problems with, you know, what exactly was your credit report fee, and mm-hmm. other issues where in a bank environment, you'll find more of some things are considered a cost of doing business and not able to pass on to the customer. Do you see that same thing?
Well, yeah, and it started with LO comp. Yeah, you used to be you could pass on extension costs back to an LO and, you know, delivery issues, and you can't do that anymore. So there's all, I mean, it's happening in every aspect of the business where we things that we used to could pass on to the consumer or we could charge back to an originator, you can't do that anymore. You've got to really, really manage it, and you're going to get surprised when all of a sudden your top-line spreads may be one thing, but your costs are exceeding what they used to be, and all of a sudden you're not making the money you were making. That's why, again, you got to come back and look at the details and build a financial tool that will really track what's actually happening.
Joe, you want to add to that?
Actually, I was thinking about something else. But
oh, well,
There's something else I want to bring up.
2 minutes
right.
for our next segment.
just thought it was interesting, as you mentioned, interesting reading earlier, there's these three cities in California that are threatening to use their powers of eminent domain to force investors of mortgages to sell them their mortgage at fair value so they can then refinance it down to a lower principal. And that's a new way to go about, you know, forcing onto the industry principal reductions. But did you guys see that? Have you read anything about that?
I have not, and boy, when you think about the loopholes, you have to go, the red tape you have to go through to prove eminent domain, that's a big mountain they're trying to climb.
Yeah, it's being purported by these three cities in California and they've already got some mortgage company in line to go in and refinance what they might get. Now, if you're a lender, do you want to do business in that city? Can you? Mm-hmm. Will your investors let you?
Well,
they don't let you do much these days. Sorry, go ahead.
Well, no, there's just going to be interesting things happening all over the place. The pace of change is accelerating. You've got Stockton, California, that's looking at filing for bankruptcy so it can deal with its public employee unions. And then it's got, you know, we've got bad things, crazy things, and then we've got good things. We've got Airbus is looking at building a 1,000-employee plant in Tennessee.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's stuff happening everywhere. You just got to be alert and be aware. And, you know, read the book, Who Moved My Cheese? Because life is continuing to change rapidly.
Oh, that's a good line. Well, as we kind of get to our last minute here, I have to give a little tip that our producer put up for us. So remember earlier in the show I mentioned, how do you capture what your website said on January 5th? He said you use WaybackMachine.com. How easy is that, right? So there's an app for everything, right? And there's a resource for everything nowadays, to your point of trying to make sure we get all the technology resources. So we have just a few more seconds here left on the show and left on this segment. I want to do a little lead in here to our next segment. Dave spent some time interviewing Joanne Misuraca. He will tell you all about who this wonderful person is, and she is really just, I've known Joanne for many years. I'm looking forward to all of you hearing Joanne's story, so stay tuned. You won't want to miss this. Thanks, Joe. Thanks, Andy. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks.
Thanks, Alice. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Mortgage Banking Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry.
If you're looking for help converting from best efforts to hedging, or need help with bookkeeping to know your profit per loan,
if you are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, or if you just need a roadmap for success, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability. With over 300 combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals. New warehouse lines of credit,
broker to banker transitions, transitioning to hedging, financial and accounting services, or meeting your capitalization needs.
If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business, please contact a Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. That's 512-977-9900.
Corporate
Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
For any of you that are regular listeners to this broadcast, you know how enthusiastic I am and thrilled about having some of the guests, or all the guests that we have on this broadcast. I don't think we've had any guests that I haven't been excited about, but it was last year at the National MBA Conference up in Chicago, and I was having dinner with Alice Alvey and Jan Wetzel, some dear friends of ours, and they invited our next guest to join in at the table. Now, I've had knowledge of this individual, but I did not know her story, her life story. And I'm going to introduce her here in just a moment. But the reason we're doing this interview right now is things are very difficult for many out there in our industry. There are a lot of people going through a lot of struggles and some serious difficulties. And it's going to probably get worse given the fact that we're going to have all the regulation coming on our industry. And many have not yet gone through a CFPB audit. And you know, you heard recently in last week's broadcast how Mitch Keiter was telling us how they're in. The CFPB is inviting all the state regulators to come at the same time and make a party out of making mortgage bankers' lives miserable. And I know that's not their motive. They're in to do the audit. But I'll tell you, it has been a miserable experience for several of them. And I'm thinking about all the difficulties that are going on across the industry. I mean, there's good money being made by many mortgage lenders, but the challenges facing us are really significant. I listened to our next guest's story, and I go, this is a wonderful contrast. The story is find someone that has a story worse than yours, and you're not going to feel so bad about yours. That's not why we're bringing our next guest on the broadcast. It's because of how she responded to some really horrific events that took place in her family's life. Folks, I want to introduce you to Joanne Misuraca, who is the executive director of the Michigan Mortgage Lenders Association. Joanne, so good to have you on the broadcast.
Thanks, Dave. Glad to be here.
Well, we do appreciate that, and also appreciate all that you're doing in Michigan and across, you know, working with the other state executive directors to, you know, really help at the state level. I think it's so important, Joanne, that we have vibrant state and local associations that are supporting the mortgage bankers. The issues that we have going across our country, Joanne, that we talk about, that Alice Alvey right there in your backyard talks about all the time going on there, it is so critical. We have vibrant, strong leadership at the state level, and I just want to publicly acknowledge for the outstanding service that you bring to the Michigan mortgage lenders, which includes brokers and bankers across the country. So good to have you here.
Thanks. Yep. Well, I work with the state and local group. We do a conference every year, so I work with different people like in my position from all across the country. We all have the same issues, a little bit different sections, but overall, running the state associations, we all have the same issues. So I get involved at the national level too.
Well, you're making a difference, and you're well-respected by your peers, the other executive directors across the country. You're well-respected, and it's because, quite frankly, I think, your character. We're talking a lot about character, and more so in the broadcast coming up. I believe that a lot of the times our industry looks at what's someone's net worth. Should someone be approved as a mortgage banker because of their net worth? I'm finding more and more evidence, Joanne, that character probably should be the number one factor that's being considered more so than the net worth. For example, if you're getting approved with Ginnie Mae, and Ginnie Mae has a requirement of whatever that amount is, I know it's officially $2.5 million, and I think they have a tendency, as anyone does, to look at the net worth, and that trumps everything. And so they may approve a company with a real strong net worth that has a weaker character. Where I'm arguing, it'd be better to approve a company with a lower net worth, but a much higher character, and that's the thing that we need to lead on. So thrilled to have you here, and one of the reasons that I want our listeners to get to know you is because of your story. Your life took some turns that weren't anticipated.
Definitely.
Tell our audience a little bit about that, if you would.
Well, I grew up in a very close Italian Catholic family. I had an older brother, older sister, and then 10 years later, another sister, and then I was born. So there's like 12 years difference between me and my older siblings.
Oh, wow. Okay, so it's a spread family. It's spread out. That's
spread
cool.
Out family, yeah. So my sister, Tony, was married to a fellow, had some mental issues, and 20 years ago he was having some difficulties with his medication and actually killed her while I was on the phone.
You're telling me he killed your sister while you're talking to her on the phone?
Yeah, it had been a number of days. Some things had happened previously that she was on edge as it was. My mother and I had gone to a graduation party, which she was invited to as well, but she didn't go because her husband was not, you know, well and not acting right. So she stayed home. We came up back from the party, called to check in to see how everything was at her house, and she was in fear because he had left the house, and she had called the police to say, you know, he's out and I'm afraid. And so as I'm speaking with her, he returned to the house, forced his way into the house, and as I was on the phone with her, I could hear screams and a confrontation. And so she had four children at the time, 16, between the ages of 16 and 11.
Yes.
So at that moment was a
pivotal moment.
Point for all of us. Yeah, I instantly became a stand-in mother to them, and now they're all very well into adulthood, and I'm expecting my fifth great grandchild in July. So it's everything's good.
That's so good. It's one of those things there's so much difficulty going on in the industry, and you hear a story like this, Joanne, it wrenches your heart. And to lose any loved one, but under these circumstances, then be on the phone. But the redeeming part of the story is you stepped in and became the parent to your sister's kids, and you've raised them all these years while running and doing all these things for the mortgage lending industry. And I think that's part of the story that I want to get out. I think so many people are looking at their whole life right now. They're looking at their industry, what's happening on them, and they're going around and saying, woe is me. I've got these troubles. It's just not fair. It's not this. And in the midst of hearing that, and we were at a dinner, and I was kind of expounding on some of those things or some of our issues that our clients are going through, and then someone told me your story, and it just takes away all complaints. How can anybody complain about anything going on in their life in contrast to the story?
I mean, there's a, you know, saying that, you know, if everyone took their problems and put them in a bowl and mixed them up, you'd only want to end up with your own problems.
Yeah.
You know, and I truly believe you only are dealt what you can deal with.
I do believe that.
So, you know, no matter what the problem is, you know, I think everyone, there's a way to face it and move on and you know, get past it.
Well, you obviously did that, but it came at a great sacrifice. You had to sacrifice so much of your own life to do that. But I think that, and this is really a form of leadership, and that's one of the things I want to draw out. There's many aspects of this story, Joanne, that we could call on, focus on, how important family is, how important it is that we be there for each other, whether it be friends, be family, extended family. But there's an aspect about this is you stepped up and you set aside your own life. You set aside your agendas, and now other people's lives became more important. I think that's a real signature, a real key to leadership. Talk about that moment. Did you struggle with that moment of what was required of you?
No, not at all. We, you know, I was single at the time, living with my mother, and it was just not a question that we went over to my sister's house at night, and they came home with us, and they were there ever since. And so I can't say I did it by myself, but I was the you know, as my mother aged, I was the person who they went to with everything, and I made the decisions and all of that.
These are just things that are just heartwarming, and I think we need to get this out in the industry, because I think, here's the deal, Joanne, leadership is one of the biggest crises we're facing in this country and within our industry, and I think what we need to do is find those examples where there has been real strong choices of leadership. Let's talk about this as it went through your career, and as you've had to deal with this, the balancing act of being a parent, a single parent, And you were a single parent this whole time, if I understand correctly. You basically put your life on hold and took on the life of others and cared for them. And you became a parent and have accomplished so much with them. Tell us about the kids. First of all, how are they doing?
I'd love to. Well, they were the oldest was 16. He hadn't at that point he hadn't had his driver's training class yet, but I gave him keys immediately. And now he's living in near San Antonio, Texas. He's working on one of those fracking sites, and he works with a Jerry Fodell company down there in Austin, and he's doing real well.
He's down here near us. We're just about an hour and a half north of San Antonio. Oh, that's outstanding. Yep. How about the others?
Christina is a teacher at in the Grosse Pointe School District here in Michigan. She's got her master's degree and is two little girls. Cadwin's two and Karis is 6 months and lives in the Detroit area here. Sam is married. He lives a mile and a half. I see him the most. He lives a mile and a half from me. He sells pharmaceutical testing device and does super. He's as cute as his personality is, and so he does real well in the sales field. He's got two little girls, Mia and Ava, and there I get to see them on a regular basis. And then Andrea is out in San Francisco, and she's married and expecting her first baby next month.
How exciting. Well, they're doing well. We're so fortunate to have an aunt and a grandma that took them in.
Three college graduates, doing real well. Yep.
You put them through college, you've done all this.
Yeah.
There were times, Joanne, that, and this is where we start drawing metaphors. We start looking at this metaphorically for other leaders that are going through difficult times. There were those challenging moments where going through those teenage years, going through what was going on, where you wanted to have a life. There has to be moments where you wanted to have a life. Tell our listeners, tell our leaders, our future leaders out there, what was the inflection point? What did you go through at those moments of great difficulty where you were really being challenged with the choices you had made?
Well, I have to admit that they were good kids. a lot of the frustrations that, you know, I see my neighbors, you know, and friends who have teenagers now, and I think the situation 20 years ago is a lot different than it is now. Now their kids are all in their 30s. It's quite different today. But yeah, we made some changes. Sam was having some problems in the public school, and we had a decision to make as, you know, if he needed to switch school. So I put him in an all boys Catholic school, and he thanks me for it every day. It changed him around. And Andrea, we were fortunate enough to send her to private school, and she had a wonderful education too, and took her all the way to San Francisco, unfortunately for me, but she loves it there and is thriving. So
she's thriving.
Good for her. Yep.
You know, we look back in life, you find out what's really important, and you look at what you've left and these children, and what a glorious story that is. And I wonder if people today, so me-oriented, Joanne, that they're really struggling with this, and I think it's so important people hear these stories and get them out so they can get out of themselves to go step up to a challenge that I think many in the industry are facing, but I think many more difficulties lie ahead for those of us in our industry,
mm-hmm.
but many more opportunities. So this was really such a tragedy. Your thoughts
we
on
could
that?
Have, we could have, you know, just wallowed in our sorrow and not moved on, but that would have been a horrible life to lead. And if you look at the positive in it, and you look at, you know, like even relating it to the regulations that are going on, you know, well, this is the cards we're dealt. We need to deal, you know, we need to deal with it, and we need to figure out a way to make it work. And, you know, that's what people need to do, and that's what I did. It's like, well, this is it. We just got to, you know, move on from here.
A lot of it's going to be attitude. You had the right attitude, Joanne.
Yeah.
And you made a choice. You had the right attitude. You made the right choice. And you did some things that were difficult, and it required quite a lot of sacrifice, literally giving up many aspects of your life. What are some of the messages you would like to see out there and lessons that they can, the things that they can learn, principles that they can learn from your life story?
Well, you know, I think there's a lot of you know, sayings out there that hold true. If it's to be, it's up to me. You know, you make your own way in life, and you can complain and make it a negative life, or you can turn it around and make it make it into a positive. And I think, you know, with that kind of an outlook, you're bound to succeed if you have a positive attitude. So that's the first thing. It's like you can't just sit there and feel sorry for yourself. You just got to pick yourself up and move on.
What's another lesson that you think is important that leaders, future leaders, the leaders we have in the industry and future leaders need to learn that you would share from your life experience?
I don't know if this really applies, but being a mother to my nieces and nephews really helped me in my position here. You know, people often joke around and like, you're the mom of the MMLA. When in a way I am. You have to keep everyone, you know, all of my employees are volunteer. So you keep them happy, keep them busy, make them feel comfortable, you know, and just kind of hold their hands at times. Speak well of them, even if you don't need to, just to keep their esteem, you know, going, so they'll help, you know, continue on. So I think, you know, being the mom or as the leader is a good role, I think.
And that's sometimes telling them what they don't want to hear. Everyone adores you, and I think it's because of that unselfishness that you've learned how to be, that mom, where it's being that caring, nurturing person in difficult circumstances.
Yeah, I mean, and I accept that role. You know, I don't mind it. I've enjoyed it. Last week was 20-year anniversary of my sister's passing, and it started out like a normal day, and then I started getting text messages from the kids of gratitude, and that really is what it's all about.
And I think that's what leaders... When you have those quiet moments when you're riding an airplane, you're sitting there by yourself, or where you're doing whatever you're doing and you're reflecting, there's got to be a great sense of a fulfillment in what the choices you've made, even though they were difficult.
Yeah, that's true. Definitely.
Well, I'm thrilled to have you on the broadcast today. We've got an event coming up. Let's talk about an exciting event going on up in Travis City, and I get to be at it. I'm so honored to be
you
there.
Too. We're happy to have you. It's our annual lending conference. It's August 5th through the 7th at the Grand Traverse Resort. It's in Acme Township, just outside of Traverse City.
It's a beautiful
resort. Our theme, it's called Staying Alive in an Era of Change. So we kind of play off the disco song, but still it's so appropriate that anyone who's in the industry is really staying alive. We've had all this change going on, and the people that are left are the survivors and the ones that are still staying alive. So that's our theme. We have not only you as a speaker, but Brian Chappelle.
Oh, good. Brian's good.
We have Frank and Brian, the Daily Show guys. They think big, work small. They're going to do a workshop for us.
Good.
And Steve Richmond from Genworth always does a great job,
too.
He does a great job, yes.
He's such a good
speaker. So we're looking forward to it. And we have some golf outing, a wine tasting tour, some auction to raise money for our legislative PAC. So it's a great event.
I'm so looking forward to being a part of it, Joanne. How can they learn more about it? What's the website that they can go to?
Our website is www.mmla.net.
Yeah, Warren Michigan Mortgage Lenders Association, initials for that, mmla.org, did you say?
Net.
Oh, .net. Folks, get that .net right. So, Joanne, thank you so much for being a part of the broadcast and sharing your story.
Oh, thanks a lot, Dave. See you in August.
This has been Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quoteline, Andy Schell of Mortgage Banking Solutions, and Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U. Come by next week, and thank you for listening.